Hello, Nick. How are you?
Listen, man, I am doing well. My favorite thing is to share what I've learned on shows just like this. So thank you for the opportunity.
The reason why we're recording this podcast is because you have a book coming out soon. It's called The Rise of the Reader, and it's going to be out on November 1st, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah, I can't wait.
Tell us more about the book. What got you to write it before we dig deeper into the topics that you cover?
Yeah, sure. So like you mentioned, the title is Rise of the Reader: Strategies for Mastering Your Reading Habits and Applying What You Learn. And I decided to write this book because books have changed my life in every way imaginable. I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy. And all of that happened in less than 10 years because I decided to read these books and apply what I learned directly to my life, my business, my health, my headspace, my mindset, and everything around me. And over the years of building my community online called Book Thinkers, hundreds of people have reached out and they've said, "Hey, Nick, I appreciate all of the book recommendations, but how do I get more from the books I'm reading?" And so I decided to write the book on the subject: how do we transform information into action?
Yeah, precisely. This is what I was going to ask you. When it comes to reading books, right? You said reading books made you happier, made you better, live a happier life, and you're doing well in terms of business. So was it just reading books, or what exactly about reading books that made you live a happier life?
Yeah, it was by taking action on these books. So I'll back up a little bit. When I was going into my senior year of college, I took an internship at a local software company. And prior to that experience, I was not a reader. So I didn't grow up reading books. I was more of the athlete stereotype, a little bit less of the academic that I am today. And so going into that job, that internship, my boss at the time, he basically said, "Hey, Nick, you have an hour commute each way. Like, listening to the same playlist of music, it's not going to get you closer to where you want to be in life, but the right business podcast might." And so I started listening to podcasts and I was crushing them. I was listening to like one or two shows a day. And what I thought was interesting was so many of the people being interviewed on these shows, they were giving at least some credit for their success to the books that they were reading. And so I just kind of had this moment where I realized if I was choosing not to read and implement these books, I was choosing to live under my potential. And so I started to read these books. I started to take action on what I was reading. I was solving problems, removing pain. I was developing skill sets, getting better at everything that I wanted to because I was reading about the world's best at every one of these subjects. And so, yeah, it's not just reading these books, but it's taking action on them. That's where the change happens.
And this is basically how you frame the rising reader, right? Because you talk about the importance of not only reading for entertainment, but reading for education. Now, I'm
Yes.
gonna try not necessarily to push back against this idea, but why should I only just be reading in order to educate myself? Maybe I wanna read for entertainment.
Yeah, I think it's great to read for entertainment. I think that for my community, most people in my community, they're reading personal development and business books, not to be entertained, but to change their lives. And the issue is they don't set the right intention for the book. And so they end up using those books as a form of entertainment when what they really wanted to do was create change. So I think if you're reading a book, like a fiction book, a fantasy novel, you know, something like that, that's great. I mean, there are so many benefits to reading books for entertainment, but you know, my target reader, they're looking to improve their lives by reading the books that they're reading. And so, yeah, I like to say it like this. If you read a great book, a business book, let's say Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, and you choose not to take action, it's no different than playing video games or watching Netflix or scrolling on your phone, right? They're just forms of entertainment unless you change your behavior. Even if you're reading for entertainment, your vocabulary is expanding, your creativity is improving. If you're reading a physical paper book, you're improving your attention span, your reading speed, comprehension. There's all these benefits, even if it's just for entertainment. But like, if your goal is to use the book to change your life, and you choose not to take action, you are being a disservice to yourself and to your future self.
Yeah, and you said an important word there, Usually, many readers do not set intentions when they're reading a book. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sometimes I'll meet people at conferences or, you know, even at parties. I'll meet people online and I'll ask them, because I'm a reader, like, hey, what are you reading? And they'll tell me. And then I'll say, why? And they're like, what do you mean, why? I'm like, well, why are you reading the book that you're reading? So I think reading without intention is one of the reasons that people don't get enough from these books. I like to set an intention, a smart goal for each book that I read. And so, you know what's funny about the early copy of my book that you had a chance to check out? I didn't detail it exactly like this, but here's how it works. I want to set a SMART intention. So SMART stands for specific, measurable, attainable / actionable, written and relevant, and time-bound. And so that goal for the book, let's say I'm reading a book on communication. Instead of just reading it and hoping that it's going to change my life, my goal for the book will be something like find and implement at least 2 strategies for improving my communication by the end of September. That is specific. It's measurable. Find and implement 2 things. I know whether or not I achieved that goal. It's attainable. I didn't say, you know, get a TEDx talk immediately. I said, just find and implement 2 ways to improve my communication. It's relevant to my life because I used to be a very poor communicator. And by reading these types of books, I've continued to improve it. I still have a long way to go. But I know that effective communication means a better life for me, more impact, more money, everything. And then it's time bound. I said by the end of September. So I give myself a deadline to take action. That encourages you to kind of prioritize the action and get your butt moving a little bit. And so I like to write that intention on the inside cover of the book and review it each time I read a few more pages. And so that's what I mean by reading with intention, setting a goal for each book so that you know whether or not it serves its purpose.
And this is particularly interesting for me because I teach philosophy, right? And you talk about setting a measurable goal, but then in order to get there, so you have these strategies that you are going to be adopting. And you want to see whether or not you've achieved your goals, let's say 6 months down the line. In order to get there, you have to develop some sort of habit, right, which you talk about. Tell us a bit more about the importance of habits in that sense.
Sure. Well, as far as an actionable strategy for everybody today, I'll say you should develop the habit of reading for 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening. So for somebody who's just starting out, 15 minutes is about 10 pages. So if you can read 10 pages in the morning and 10 pages in the evening, that's 20 pages a day. You do that for 5 days a week, that's 100 pages a week. Most of these books now in the world of personal development, we could talk about philosophy too, but in the world of personal development, you know, business, communication, psychology, things like that, most of the books are about 200 pages. So that's a book every 2 weeks. If it's a 250-page book, a book every 2.5 weeks, that's 20 to 26 books a year. Simply by reading for 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening. And that habit, you could improve 20 different areas of your life. You can remove 20 different problems. You know, there's so many different ways to think about it. But in the book, I do talk about how to build habits and about how to remove bad habits as well, because I think that's an important part of the process. Like, we have to understand, you know, what activates a certain action and what outcome that action creates, as part of this habit psychology process.
Yeah. And this is really interesting as well, because you talk about personal growth and business development as well. And the reason why I mentioned philosophy is because there are kind of overlaps there, right? I am currently also writing a book. We're going to be discussing book thinkers shortly as well, for business leaders. And I do talk about this, the importance of self-awareness, developing, like if you want to grow and develop yourself, you need to think about all sorts of things. You need to be aware of your points of strength and weakness, right? So the question I want to ask here is, yes, great. In your case, you started reading, right? You weren't a reader before. So for someone who doesn't really like reading and couldn't care less and doesn't see the value there, how would you get them? So you meet someone and he tells you or she tells you, I don't care, right? Reading. How would you get them to think about and introspect about the importance of, okay, I want to read, like reading is important?
Yeah, there are a few different directions I could go. I'll mention a few different examples. So sometimes I'll meet people that tell me they don't have time to read. And I'll say, if I paid you $10,000 to read a book by the end of next week, do you think you could do it? And they're like, well, I could read five, you know? So it's a question about, do you value the books or not, not whether or not you have time to read. Okay, so as far as valuing books, I could use some of my personal experiences. I mean, last year I read a book called $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozi. And within 6 months, I generated an additional six figures of revenue in my business. So that $20 in a few hours of my time for the book experience led to hundreds of thousands of dollars of actual tangible money. That's the power of a book. Or I could put it this way. If you're dealing with a specific pain, something in your daily life is frustrating you on a daily basis, over the next 30 years, you'll experience that pain 11,000 times. Or you could read a book about overcoming that pain, solve the problem in the next couple of weeks, and avoid experiencing it 11,000 times over the next 30 years. Because these books, they literally condense decades of somebody else's lived experience into days of reading and implementation. And so many of us think the pains that we're experiencing are unique to us and that we have to suffer them. Whereas the reality is that billions of people have lived before us, millions of them have written books, and thousands of those books could probably help you overcome the same problem that you're facing today. Your own personal failure and experience and suffering, it's a great teacher. But other people's failures and how they overcame them, it's a shortcut that you can read from the comfort of your own home so that you don't have to experience it yourself. And by the way, in as little as 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening, you can change your life. So those are some of the things that I would I'd probably start with. And I think if you can recommend a book to somebody that does solve a problem that they're facing on a daily basis, they'll be connected to it because they do want to remove that pain. Most people want to remove that pain.
I mean, I do agree with that. And I was there at some point. I also was not a reader growing up, even though somehow I ended up reading and studying philosophy. Don't ask me how. So I read and write for a living now. But I think sometimes also, in addition to not wanting to read, or even if you read, you have some sort of, you develop this suspicion toward what would be categorized or labeled as either self-help or self-development or business development, right? And you do talk about this in the book. So, and you do mention your friends and family, etc. You know, there's this stigma around self-help and all that genre in general. What are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I've come to realize that most authors in the space, whether they stem from data or personal experience, they're writing to help the reader. They have great intentions. That's the vast majority of people in the space. And I've used those books to design my dream life. And I mean that. I genuinely am happy. I genuinely enjoy the passage of time as a result of reading these books. So from my own personal experience, I know that this is true. But there are some bad actors, as there are in every industry. And some of those people have become very successful. You could call them snake oil salespeople, right? They're writing these books not to help the reader, but to make money and to upsell them into courses and coaching and consulting, which, by the way, can be very good. But sometimes the reader gets taken advantage of by, you know, the author making false promises, unrealistic expectations, lying in their books. And so that's why, yeah, I have had friends and family and friends of my family, you know, saying things like, you're just speaking into an echo chamber. These books don't create results. And even after all of the success that I've experienced today, and even after all of the personal changes I've made in my own life as a result of these books, people still cast negativity to the industry. So that's just how it's going to be. That's just how it happens. But I'm optimistic. I think most of these authors, most of these people, they're just out there to share what they've learned, what they've been studying with the reader, just like you're going to do with your book, I would imagine.
Yeah. And in this case, so if you're starting out, in your case, maybe you can talk about your journey or how you would advise other people do it. How would you distinguish which book would be good in general and which book would be good for you to solve a particular problem? How would you choose?
Yeah, if somebody's just starting out, I would recommend first principles thinking. Try to understand the basics of what you're learning. So I think I give an example in the book where I say, you know, if you're looking to learn a little bit more about money, don't start with something like The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham, right? It's a very dense book. It's very dry. It has a lot of very advanced things in it. And that might reinforce the inadequacy that you're already feeling. But if you start with something like Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, which teaches the basic fundamentals of financial literacy, and it's written at, you know, a fifth grade reading level, okay, that's a great place to start. And you'll start to have some of those aha moments and feel good. As far as researching authors, I think it's important to understand their backstory. Google them, read a little bit about them, you know, read on some of these platforms like Goodreads or Amazon or Reddit. Look for threads about these people and see what other people have to say. You know, when you're looking on Amazon and you're looking at reviews of a potential book, I would say toss out the 5-star reviews and toss out the 1- and 2-star reviews because those are typically written from a place of emotion. And look at the 3- and 4-star reviews. That's where all the logic happens. And so you can really get a good understanding of what the average person thought after reading this book. Was it unrealistic? You know, was the author just trying to sell them something? And you should toss those books out. Don't even try to read them. Only read about people who have done what you're looking to do and have successfully helped other people do it as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, my personal kind of story is that up until 2 years ago, I would only be reading the classics and, you know, the hardcore philosophy books. But then because I got several opportunities to create courses on the side that involved business leaders and whatnot. So for the past 2 years, I've been listening more than reading, in my case, to all these books that you mentioned and many other books about business development and even personal development. And to be honest, before I had some sort of idea about these kinds of book thinking, you know, what is this going to be offering me as a person? There's some prejudice there, you know, it's not as deep as reading Hegel and all that jazz. But then after I started reading, you do learn new things. And two, it's very relatable because of the way these books are written. And so there is a lot of value there. Like I have not read hardcore philosophy for the past 2 years because I'm now in a rabbit hole jumping from one book to the other. In my case, again, because I do write on the side, like, you know, I write articles about them and I prepare courses, etc. But then there is a lot of value there. And I think what adds this value is if you really are actually experiencing or have some sort of problem. Right. So if you read whichever book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or any other business development book or self development, like the 4-Hour Week, for example, you talk about this as well. If you are in a place like I want to know what you think about this. If you're in a place whereby you don't care about lifestyle design, you're not experiencing any particular problem in that area, reading this book is not going to be adding any value because you're not going to be receptive and there isn't anything there that would resonate with you. Maybe there is, but then it wouldn't be the same impact it would have if you actually have a problem, right? And right. This is what I noticed. So what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, if you read without intention, you're less likely to take action. Part of that SMART goal framework is relevance. Is it relevant to your life? Is it relevant to a skill you're looking to develop? Is it relevant to a problem you're looking to overcome? That's how you get tied emotionally to these books. And so I think that if you just read a random book hoping that it's going to change your life, you may find something in there of value, but you're less likely to find value reading randomly than you are reading with intention. Part of my business, I've been paid to read a lot of books that I wouldn't necessarily have chosen to read otherwise, and I've found a lot of valuable things in them. In fact, some of the books that I still quote today and give a lot of credit to were not books that I deliberately chose to read or thought it was going to solve a problem I was facing. So I do always want to stay open and curious, but I think especially in the beginning of your journey, when you know what you're trying to overcome, it's really important to read books about solving those problems or developing those skill sets.
In addition to the books that you already cited, which two books would you say have influenced you the most in your journey, like have had a huge impact, let's say?
So the books I've already mentioned that I won't do a deep dive on are Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I mean, you mentioned The 4-Hour Work Week. I talked about $100 Million Offers, I think, by Alex Hormozi, generating a bunch of additional revenue for my business. So we'll toss those to the side for a minute. The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. It's one of my favorite books of all time. It teaches you that small steps in the right direction, repeated for a very long period of time, will lead to that hockey stick growth that we're all looking for. Disproportionately positive outcomes. And so how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? You know, no matter how many times you read Aesop's fable, the tortoise and the hare, the tortoise always wins. And so I really try to think about small behaviors repeated on a daily basis. And more popularly now, Atomic Habits, it's a very similar concept. That book has sold 10 million plus copies over the last few years. So yeah, people are looking to improve their habits. I think that book applies to anybody in any area of their life. There's an example in Atomic Habits, and I recreated it for my book, where there's a plane going from Los Angeles to New York City. But before the plane takes off, the nose of the plane is shifted just 1%. And let's say it's shifted 1% to the north. You're going to end up about 150 miles off course as that 1% change compounds. At first, it's imperceptible, but by the end of the trip, you know you've missed your mark. So what 1% changes can you make in your health, in your wealth management, personal finance, in your happiness? What 1% changes can you make in any area of your life so that 5 years from now, 3,000 miles later, you know, it's a very noticeable difference? So that's one book. And I'll also mention, this is a great beginner book too, The Go-Giver by Bob Berg and John David Mann. So The Go-Giver is actually a fable. It's fiction, but it teaches a lot of nonfiction life lessons. And in that book, I mean, there are five kind of core truths. My favorite one is the reciprocal relationship between giving and receiving. I think for a long time in my life, I was a go-getter. And so I was take, 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 take. And then I overcorrected once I realized that impact and being of service to other people was way more important. So I'd only give, 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 and not be open to receiving. Now I've realized that the more I give, the more I can receive, which gives me the ability to give more and then receive more and give more and receive more and build this bigger community. So that's a really beautiful book, and I highly recommend that one too.
Yeah, I in fact have not listened to Atomic Habits or The Go-Giver, so I will add them to the list. I am a bit skeptical about Atomic Habits for some reason. What would you say to... if you were to try to convince me, in addition to what you just said, like Atomic Habits, should I or should I not read it? Let's say I am having problems when it comes to developing habits.
If your intention for the book was, I'm looking to find and implement at least 3 habit disruption strategies to improve my health by the end of the month, you'd get a heck of a lot out of the book. I was on with somebody the other day who told me that because of that book, he lost 60 pounds and he's kept it off. You know, so I think that as long as you are reading that book with intention, you know, and you know that you struggle with habits in a certain area of your life, it's great. you know, I prefer the book, The Compound Effect. I like that better than Atomic Habits for habit development and making 1% changes in your life, but they're very similar books.
I mean, I think my wife listened to it. I think, so she also is into productivity and stuff. We do have different approaches, and this is, I also want to ask you about this. When it comes to tracking your changes, you know, setting goals, etc., and taking notes, like you talk about how important it is to take notes when you're reading. After you read, put the book down, write what you learned, because this will help retention, etc. Confession, I don't do absolutely any of that.
Not yet.
Not yet. But then my wife does that. Like she is into taking notes, and she's a Notion kind of whiz, etc. But in my case, I'm like, nah. But I don't, even though I don't do that, I do sit afterwards. In a way, I do take notes, perhaps because I write about the books I'm reading. So I keep going back and forth. Maybe I need to develop a new system of note taking. But,
well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, tell me.
So over the next 12 months, there's two versions of you, and you probably know where this is going. There's the version of you that continues to do it the way that you're doing it today, yeah. Or there's the version of you that continues to do it the way you're doing it today, plus takes some additional notes, adds a little bit of additional organization. Who do you think wins that battle?
Yeah, I mean, see, I do agree with you. It's just for some reason, I'm like, nah. I don't know, but I do see the importance. And I think, see, this is the thing. Like you can, that's part of my thought process now, which is in a way, I don't think you can persuade, again, from a philosophy perspective, because I always talk about argumentation and debates and stuff like that. You cannot really persuade. But now, after I've been thinking about this for the past 6 months, because I am trying to develop new habits. I may not start taking notes in a rigorous way, but then for some reason, I am noticing the importance of doing that because not only is it helping me retain ideas, but it's also helping me articulate my ideas better. You know, so sometimes I read, like, let's say, or I listen to 3-4 books, yes, because I am looking for particular things, but then I let the idea slip. I come back 2 months later and then I'm lost. I don't know. I cannot even talk about the books in a smooth way. You know, I cannot communicate my ideas. And so because I have been personally experiencing this problem, then reading your book, seeing the importance of taking notes. Now I'm a little bit kind of more inclined to do that, right? So I think it's a process. But yeah, I completely agree with you. It's like it is important. I think the reason why I'm skeptical about this is because of all this second brain kind of habit and fad. I don't know what to call it. Like I don't have absolutely anything against it, but then like I think I fear that if I start taking notes, I would never go back to them, and I would just, you know, it would be a waste of time.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. One of my mentors, who I wrote about in the book a little bit, Kevin Horsley, he says, only if you can remember information can you truly live it. So the idea of, like, let's say Tiago, who wrote, what is his book called? It's out of here. It's called Building a Second Brain.
Mm-hmm,
Tiago
mm-hmm.
Forte. So I don't love the idea of offloading everything to a second brain either, but I do think that rewriting notes is a form of repetition. Repetition strengthens retention because you're forming a stronger neural pathway to the stored information. And if you can put your notes in a place where you can review them consistently, you'll strengthen that relationship and be able to access it because it's organized more efficiently. And so I do think that it helps. It's not to offload it. It's to repeat the information and then be able to review it more consistently. And I hear you. You know, I've tried to solve that problem about making sure that my notes don't go stale. And I haven't solved it. I really haven't solved it yet, but I'd like to solve it. And listen, the very first version of BookThinkers that failed was going to be this mobile application or website where you could store your favorite takeaways from the book, and then they would fall into a repetition algorithm, like a reminder cadence, a cue. And so you'd log into the platform and it would say, today you have 5 notes to review, for instance. And you'd have to read through them and mark them as complete. Because I wrote about it in the book a little bit, but the forgetting curve, like when you read something, the likelihood that you've retained it on day one is pretty high. But as time goes on, if you don't review it, it slips. But if you can insert another review point a couple of days later, then you're strengthening that connection. Now you can go a week, let's just say, without reviewing the information. But if you don't review it at that week mark, it will slip. So now you got to insert another reminder there. Now you can remember for 2 weeks. And so the more often you repeat this action, the more likely you are to retain it. So I haven't built that system out yet, but I'd love to do that again one day.
Yeah, it's it definitely is tempting and interesting. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I do take, like, I do have notes all around, but then yeah, I never revisit. But I'm aware I need to change my note taking habits in order to retain a bit more, and that's the importance of habits that you're talking about. And I've been doing a lot of changes, particularly over the past 3 months, because I started writing a book. And the compound effect, at one point I was stressing out how I wrote, just to contextualize things, a PhD thesis, right, with 60, 70,000 words. And every time I want to sit down and write something, I stress. And then I was like, 500 words a day. I'll have, like, you know, that's... So I set the minimum, and then I've been doing that, and I have a work routine, et cetera, et cetera. What was your process to get there? Like, writing a book is not an easy thing, right? What was the process like?
Yeah, it was really difficult for me. I thought, because I'm a very disciplined person, I have all these routines, that I could just sit down and, like you're talking about, right, 500 words a day or something, really chunk it down to manageable. But that didn't happen for me. I mean, I got in the flow in the very beginning. I was very inspired. And then, you know, I run a business and I have a life. I got married earlier this year. We travel a lot.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And so, yeah, it would just continue to fall on the priority list. And, you know, I'm putting out fires in my business and learning how to grow a business and answering customer questions and stuff. And so, it would consistently fall. But every single time I was asked by somebody in my community, Nick, what's the process for implementing more from the books or reading? How do I retain more? Why am I forgetting? How do I take notes? I would be reminded that this book is connected to a purpose, and that if I can get it out there, even 80% of my best effort, that's better than what's available today for most people, which really is nothing in the personal development space. And so, I just persevered. I got it done. It was really hard. And I have so much more respect for the authors that we work with, because I undervalued how hard it was to write a book.
It is tough, because every time you have new ideas, and then you either want to elaborate more on these ideas, you don't know what to cut out, and then comes the editing part, and it's an entire process and the hassle. So yeah, it's it's a huge step now. You're going down that line. I'm assuming you're going to be having all sorts of events and activities. Things are going to be quite busy for you in the next few weeks. But when I saw BookThinkers also, which is your business, the company that you started, in addition to the book, I was also curious, because it's interesting. I mean, I personally, the things that I'm doing, my podcast, and I do write articles on the side about books, etc. Like, this is part of what I do. I do run a community as well, etc. And I'm just interested in these kinds of things. Like, the entire point of the podcast is to talk about with people who have interesting things to say, who write books, etc. And this is something you do, BookThinkers. So tell us more about your company, the services that you guys offer, what is it about, etc., the community aspect and the services aspect.
Yeah, when I first started reading these books and they helped me solve a lot of pain and overcome difficulties, they helped me develop skill sets, I just started sharing the books I was reading on social media with the intention of connecting with like-minded people and maybe working in the space one day because I was really energized by it. So version one, we tried to build this mobile application that I just talked about, didn't work, but in anticipation of building this mobile community, I built an audience so that I could sell the app to my audience. And I did that by sharing the books that I was reading. And although the app failed, what did happen was authors started to reach out to me and they'd say, "Hey, Nick, I love the community. I love your book reviews. Can I pay you to review my book?" And I was like, "Well, that's pretty cool. I can get paid to read something I'm doing for free." And so I started to do paid book reviews. And from there, you know, I'm reading all these business books about how to grow a business. I was taught to follow up with my clients and say, "Hey, is there anything else that I can help with that I could try out for you related to book marketing? Because again, I want to work in this space full time one day." So I tried a heck of a lot of things. Most of them didn't work, but I got to know my customer's problem. It's tough when you spend decades living your life, then years writing about it, and then nobody buys your book. That's a really painful experience for a lot of these authors. So I wanted to figure it out because again, I believe in this industry. Kind of fast forward until today, I have 10 people on my team. We support hundreds of authors a year in some type of paid capacity. And most of our revenue comes from three things. Short form video content, where we help an author turn their book into social media content, typically 50 or 100 videos. Number two, podcast booking, so placing authors on shows to talk about their book. And then number three, book reviews. The community that we have on Instagram and other platforms, we have about 150,000 on Instagram, maybe another 50,000 across the other platforms. And so we love to share book recommendations on a daily basis and introduce people to books that maybe they wouldn't have seen otherwise. And so that's what we do. And although it seems like just a couple of services, it's grown to be quite a big business now relative to what I thought it would be when I first started it. And yeah, I'm happy helping these people because at the end of the day, I do believe that the right book at the right time can change somebody's life, which I think is probably apparent at this point in the show. And whether I'm recommending a book or I'm helping an author behind the scenes create a larger social media following or get on podcasts, like the end result is the same. The right person ends up with the right book at their hands and they take the right action and it changes their life. So that's a little bit about what my business does and kind of who we serve and why I started it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think you've been running for, I think in 2017, you started the company, right? So
it was a little bit more of a side hustle back then, you know, than a full-time job, but now it's a full-time job.
I'm also interested in your backstory in addition to what you mentioned. So what, before you got into all this, what did you do before? You mentioned your internship, but then?
Yeah, so in college, I ran my own house painting business for 2 years. And I'd go home every weekend, I'd knock on doors, I'd set up estimates, I'd go close them. And then I hired a bunch of my friends to work for me during the summers painting these houses. And so I got a little taste of what it was like to run a business, but I also realized I had a lot of things to work on. It was very humbling at the same time. So I took this internship going into my senior year. I decided to work for somebody else. It was a sales internship in a small business. And I also worked, you know, although I started BookThinkers around the same time, I also took a full-time job with them once I graduated. So I was working a 9-to-5, developing sales skills and learning more about small business. It was a tech sales job. And then I'm funneling those skills into my 5-to-9, right? My side hustle, BookThinkers, which was unsuccessful for a long time. And so as I'm working in this business, I'm consistently failing in my side hustle. But again, it's connected to a purpose. Like I believe in these books and I want to figure it out. So fast forward a couple of years, I start to get a little bit of traction. And I thought, you know what, I think I'm ready to make the jump, right, from my full-time job into my side hustle. And I had a mentor tell me, don't do it. Don't jump off the cliff and try to build a parachute on the way down. 95% of small businesses fail in the first 5 years because they run out of money. And you don't want that to be you, right, Nick? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So what I started to optimize for within my full-time job was, how do I keep my job but automate as much as I can so that I can focus more of that time and energy into my side hustle? So my full-time job became remote. I started focusing more and more of my time in my business. And, you know, I even tried to minimize risk. This is how much I tried to minimize risk. I had full-time employees and my business was doing tens of thousands of dollars a month in revenue before I made the jump. I still had my job. And then, yeah, that drove a little bit of insecurity because I'm like being interviewed on shows, the founder of Book Thinkers, but I still had another job on the side, right? So it was a little goofy, but now I tell that story because unfortunately, people do think that entrepreneurship is easier than it is. And they'll quit everything and they'll bet it all on one business idea and then it will fail and they'll run out of money and then they'll never start a business again. And that's not how it should work. You know, so my moral of that story is again, slow and steady wins the race. And I consistently failed for years, but the road to success and failure for me were the same road. I just had to persevere a little bit longer. I was 3 feet from gold a couple of times, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and there are a few important things here before we wrap it up with some habits. One, which is you did not, so you hedged your risk, which is extremely important. And then two, don't go all in. And this is why it's preferable if people can have several small bets, as Daniel Vassallo would say. I don't know if you know him or the community, but it's try to create several projects because you never know which one will eventually end up being successful and which ones will fail. But having said that, because you said you persevered through failure, was it? I don't think it was persevering through failure as much as learning from the mistakes you were making. I mean, yeah, you were persevering, but then you were clearly changing things in order, like slowly but surely, in order to get to the point where, okay, now it's successful because this is what people want and this is the problem it's solving, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, my biggest issue with the US public education system is that it teaches kids to avoid failure. And so I grew up thinking that failure was a bad thing. I grew up thinking that if you fail, you'll be penalized. You know, your parents get mad at you for bringing home bad grades. Kids laugh at you for not performing well during a presentation or something. And it's totally backwards. In the world of entrepreneurship, failure is the best thing. I mean, it's where all of the growth occurs. If you just win all the time, there's no story there. So you're right. I did have to persevere. There was a lot of failure, but failure was a good thing. And when you expect it to be part of the process, it's just part of the process.
Yeah. And celebrating small wins, you do talk about this. But then to wrap it up, you do mention habits for a happy life, for a better financial/wealthy life. What would be two habits that you think are essential for each category?
Yeah, good question. So we could talk about health first. I think getting great sleep, I mean, that's a superpower of mine. I really optimize for it, like you could see in the book. And one of my favorite sleep recommendations is to stop consuming caffeine in the afternoon. So caffeine has a half-life of 6 to 8 hours, which means that if you drink coffee in the afternoon, half of it is still around circulating through your body while you're trying to fall asleep. So yeah, you might fall asleep, but your sleep quality will suffer. So to start with, let's stop consuming caffeine in the afternoon. And
you're telling this to decaf.
Yes, I'm telling
decaf
this
quest. I mean, I do drink mate. It's a mate tea, the Argentine thing. And it does have matein. I also stopped. By no, like I don't drink after that because I did have my issues with caffeine before when I was teaching at the university, I would have 6 espressos. And then I thought to myself, no, I need to quit that. And then I it's not that I've gone decaf 100%, but then just like you said, like this resonated with me. After 12, nothing.
Yes,
water and
perfect.
Not even tea. It's like just water.
Yeah, just water for me as well. And I stopped drinking water around 8 p.m. That's ideal. So that when I go to sleep, you know, I don't have to get up and disrupt my sleep in the middle of the night. I'll throw out another fun one for people. I tape my mouth when I sleep because breathing through your nose has so many benefits. Yet, unfortunately, so many of us breathe through our mouths while we sleep. It's 8 hours of poor oxygen, bad sleep. And if you snore, that's sleep apnea. That's disruptive. It takes you out of the deeper states of sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep, and it just forces you to feel worse in the morning when you wake up. So that'll be my second health tip to everybody. There's a company that I use. It's called Hostage Tape. It's a little piece of tape that you put over your mouth before you go to bed, and you'll get the best sleep of your life.
Do you ever have like nightmares, wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, oh my God, I'm being kidnapped or something?
I don't. But even if you do, you'll get over it through repeated exposure. Yeah. And remember, if you have bad sleep for the next 30 years, you're going to sleep poorly 11,000 times. So you might as well spend the first 100 days figuring out those nightmares. But then you have 10,900 good nights of sleep.
I completely agree with you when it comes to sleep. Like, I also cherish my sleep. At least 8 hours. If I don't get 8 hours of sleep, I cannot function properly. And then you talk about the importance of using weighted blankets and then to have sleep in a cooler room, et cetera, et cetera. And then when it comes to the other kind of habits, when it comes to financial business stuff, development.
Sure. One of my favorite financial tips is two habits. The first I'll say is set up an emergency fund. I saw a crazy stat, like 50% of Americans, they couldn't come up with $1,000 in an emergency. So it's like, start to set aside some money. You know, you can leverage Parkinson's law, which essentially states that the more money you make, the more money you're going to earn if it's available to you. So set up a separate bank account. The minute that you earn some money, make sure a portion of it gets automatically distributed to a different bank account. Don't have that app on your phone. Sign up for that bank account, set up the automation, and then don't check it. Forget about it. You never had it. And set up that emergency fund. Like, it will build itself over time slowly. You will readjust your spending to having a little bit less money. And that will eliminate a scarcity mindset, because you'll know once you've saved up a few months of income on the side, you're not investing it. You're just keeping it there in a semi-liquid state so that you have access to it in an emergency. And I think that's a really important one.
I'm not sure this is Parkinson or Matthew effect. I think you meant Matthew effect.
Parkinson's law, as it applies to a task, is like, if you give yourself a deadline, you'll take up until that deadline.
It translates
to bank accounts too. The same person that's making $50,000, all of a sudden they make 60 and they wonder where the money went.
Okay. I see that.
Spending.
I mean, you're right. I've also been thinking about this for the past 2 months as well. Rethinking.
Yeah.
Finances.
And the Matthew effect is a really fun thing to learn as well. Not one of my wealthy tips, but I think it's the more you earn, the more you can earn, the more you read, the more you can learn. So like, there's just, you know, there's a lot of great tips there. I'll mention another one. You know, I think as far as productivity, you know, a big piece of my wealthy habits section is about productivity. Think 80-20. You know, 20% of the activities that you do on a weekly basis probably drive 80% of the results in your business or your job. So find a way to automate, delegate, or eliminate all the low impact stuff and like double, triple down on the high impact stuff. I do that as it relates to my finances. I do that in business, relationships, happiness, you know, all of those things. Like, think 80-20. What 20% of things that you're doing on a weekly basis matter the most? Not every activity is created equal. And I think a lot of people get that wrong. More work does not necessarily lead to more money, but better work leads to more money. And so to kind of like really be reflective and work on your life instead of in your life, that's one of my favorites.
Again, this is I really liked your book because it does have like on the one hand the importance of reading and then developing a habit as we talked, you know, taking notes, etc., to improve, set an intention, measure your goals, etc., and your progress. But then on the other hand, I really liked the habits section as well. So I think I'm going to be going back and forth through that every now and then to just, you know, check them out, see which would be more interesting for me at this particular time. So yeah, I really enjoyed the book. It's a fun read. Is it we did talk, it's going to be released on November 1st. Which formats is it available in?
So it'll be available by November 1st, every format. So you can listen to the audiobook. If you didn't hate my voice, you could check it out by November 1st. It should be available. And then Kindle is available, paperback is available, and hardcover is available. So you can read it in every format.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be getting the audiobook and listening to it again. So yeah, it was fun. And this was fun. Where can people find you, Nick?
One of my favorite things to do is play like book matchmaker. And so if anybody wants a custom book recommendation from me, they can go to Book Thinkers on Instagram and DM me. Tell me about a problem you're facing. Tell me about a skill set that you want to develop, and I'll provide a book recommendation. And yeah, like I said, it's one of my favorite things to do. I'll even hold you accountable to it. I'll follow up with you in a couple of months. And from there, you can check out the links in the bio, find links to the book and links to everything else in my universe.
Yeah, thank you very much. And this was a fun discussion. And thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a good day.